Robert Kurka's Julius Caesar, Symphonic Epilogue after Shakespeare, Opus 28 of 1955, the world premiere recording, recorded in June of 2002 at Orchestra Hall by the Grant Park Orchestra and its principal conductor, Carlos Kalmar. Carlos Kalmar is our guest tonight. Welcome to another edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer, Andrew Patner. One of the many things that Carlos Kalmar has done in the 11 years he has been heading up the musical side, the conducting side of the Grant Park Music Festival, has been to make these wonderful recordings, chiefly of American music. Though Carlos is from Uruguay and from Vienna, he has fallen in love at Grant Park with American music and made these wonderful recordings with Chicago's own Sadie Records. We'll be talking about that in the course of our conversation. We spoke with Carlos and with Lee Levine, the interim executive director of the Grant Park Music Festival, a few weeks ago in the choral room behind the stage of the J. Pritzker Pavilion in Millennium Park, which is now, of course, the home to the Grant Park Music Festival, its orchestra and chorus. And you'll also hear in the course of our conversation some news, good news, about Carlos Kalmar and Grant Park.
The first couple of months of 2011 have been insanely busy, which of course I consider very, very good. I actually started January in being in Japan, which, with the news that we have received lately, it's kind of an odd thing, because you have been there, you have had contact with so many musicians, and I know several others there, and now all of them face tragedy, worries, etc. But it was a great deal of fun. I have been, of course, in Oregon many, many times. And I have been with the CBSO, City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, in Great Britain. I have been conducting in Vienna. I have been working in Madrid, where I'm going to be the music director starting in September, October.
Do you have pictures of your children on your phone or something?
I need to do that because otherwise, or they need to do that because otherwise they forget how do I look like. Well, the good news is my children are grown up, so it's just a different relationship, of course, that you have with children who are not even teens
right
anymore.
Right. What were you doing in Japan with what group or groups?
I was conducting the Yomiuri Nippon Orchestra, which is one of the orchestras in Tokyo. It's a very nice orchestra, very musical people. And the music director right now is Sylvain Camberla.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And good man.
Yeah, a real modern music specialist and Boulez protege and so on. So they must be pretty good at counting 11 against 6.
Well, I didn't have to do that because I did Brahms. And as you know, Brahms didn't really write 11 against 6.
So they brought you in as a specialty conductor for the weird stuff.
Yeah.
How is Oregon faring? We see and read about so many of the mid-sized orchestras and smaller-sized, not necessarily in quality, but in population numbers, smaller-sized cities facing difficulties with their orchestras. Obviously, there have been big labor issues in Detroit. How's Oregon doing in all of this?
Oregon is probably doing as well or as bad as you can do in times like these. Oregon is a fascinating place for many, many reasons, but just let's stick to orchestral things here. On one side, the fascination is where Oregon has gotten, artistically speaking, over the past 8 years. It's a miracle. On the other side, in terms of finances, and we always have to talk about that, being music directors, The fascination is that Oregon has been running a deficit, accumulating, piling up money that we are owe for 17 years.
It's not just had a deficit, it's been accumulating a deficit for 17 years.
For 17, which is pretty much many other orchestras would have run out of business by that, by then. And then the economy hits us all. And that is the year when we balance the budget and we erase the entire deficit. It was a very bold move that, that was, of course, led by the president of the orchestra and the chair of the board. But it was absolutely what needed to be done. And
Was there a community advertising campaign?
No. What we do...
Arm-twisting?
I don't know whether there was arm twisting, but in the at the end of the day, you just use unrestricted money from the endowment, and the endowment in Oregon, sadly enough, is very, very small. That's the bad news. The good news is if your endowment is very small with the economy, you lose very little money.
That's true.
I mean, we all know the big organization lost gazillions.
Right.
And we
I think
didn't.
That was the exact figure.
So you didn't
have that kind of a loss and didn't have those kinds of expectations.
Yeah. So having, I must say that at the end of the day, we erased the deficit for the first time in 17 years in Oregon. But the struggle is not over. I mean, but this is average. Mm-hmm. I mean, show me the orchestras in the country. At least all the orchestras of that size who are not struggling. I mean, to all of us, you mentioned Detroit. The mess in Detroit was a huge surprise because we are talking about a big orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most important. It's among the top 10, I would dare to say.
Surely.
And, I mean, them struggling and really being at the brink of completely meltdown. And disappearing. Okay, now things seem to go way better, and I'm very, very glad. For me, it is unthinkable to lose such a great symphony.
Right. How are you all doing there in terms of audience and overall, and in terms of new audiences, new audience members?
We are doing, I would say, quite all right. The point is that over the last couple of years, we have seen pretty much everywhere a substantial decline in audience members, and we haven't seen that in Oregon. Matter of fact, as far as the subscription, the classical subscription concert, we were very steady, and here and there we had some highlights. And we had a little bit of a struggle in terms of the pops. But the good news is we hired 3 years ago a new principal pops conductor, my colleague Jeff Tysig, and with him it's going really up the hill, this entire thing. He's doing fantastically well, so people are coming back.
It's interesting, isn't it, that people will say orchestras need more pops, or they need less pops, or they need more modern, or they need less modern. But if the quality is there, that's usually when the response comes. It's not just that you can say, we should have 4 weeks of pops. We should have 4 weeks of pops with a really charismatic, interesting programmer conductor. Or we should have modern contemporary music with somebody who believes in it. Or we should have American music with somebody who wants to conduct it.
I think that in any orchestra here in America, it's all about the mixture. If you leave any of these things that you just mentioned out of the equation, you might, on the longer run, you might run into some type of trouble. I think that to rely all of a sudden on pops because they at first sight sell well will not solve the problems on the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. And of course, if you have the leading people, meaning the music director, the number two, the principal pops conductor, as people who are not communicating with the people who live there, meaning being included in the community, it will not work either. So it's an entire package. It's quite a complete job, I must say.
It must be. And then also Japan, Vienna, and fortunately for us, this little pocket in the summer where you pack a complete package and a complete season into 10 weeks on the lakefront here at the Grant Park Music Festival.
Well, for me, this ever since I came here, it was always a dream, but I would say, I can now say that this dream, first of all, the excitement of leading a festival in a city like Chicago was fantastic from the get-go. But the big change was when we took over the Pritzker Pavilion. And with Frank Gehry's piece of art here and the facilities here and the state-of-the-art sound enhancement that we have here, we exploded. It's as simple as that. As a festival, we exploded. I can tell, it's like a fairy tale if I say that when we were at Petrillo, which was nice, we averaged, let's say, 2,500, 3,000 people in the audience when we played concert. Here, a medium as attended night would average six and a half. So it's even more than double on nights that are not really something special. On nights where we have something popular, something that, let's say, we can easily pitch to the crowd, Beethoven 9, people hanging off the walls. We have, I don't know, 12,000, something like that. It's incredible what happens here. And for me to be a participant of this dream is really, it's fantastic. Couldn't get better.
I think what so many of us who have been coming to the concerts literally all our lives, and that includes people twice my age and down, because I know you have people in their hundreds, all the way down to little kids and babies. But what I think is most interesting for all of us is that when, as you say, the festival exploded, rather than saying, well, now we have all of this, we don't have to do serious things, or we don't have to do challenging things, or we better not do those things. No, those things exploded too and continued to be a part of it. I'm just looking here at the June part. That's not even a full month. That's the truncated part of the festival. You have the Symphonie Fantastique. You have a major soloist coming in for the Ravel G major piano concerto. You have a program that you wouldn't see, all right, you're going to tell me you did it in Oregon, probably, or somewhere, but you wouldn't see it anywhere else. You are doing, we're going to come back and talk about this in detail, but Mendelssohn's Lobgesang and Schoenberg's Frieda auf Erden with the chorus and soloists. That's the whole program there. Then you have Regina Carter coming in, playing a classical jazz concerto and the orchestra. You have a Latin program that you have put together, and we'll talk about that. And you have a program of American choral works inside at the Harris Theater that your colleague Christopher Bell has put together. That's just June.
Well, I think that reflects so well what we actually do. When I started to become the principal conductor of the Grant Park Music Festival, Jim Palermo, who was at that time the general director and artistic director of the festival, he asked me whether I would be interested in some... we never used the word eclectic, but at the end it was kind of an eclectic mixture. We always wanted to focus on... let's not forget things that are actually not being played somewhere else. Let's mainly focus on American music. And we have done, over the first couple of years, a lot of that. I wouldn't say that we have shifted our philosophy of programming overall, but for me, again, it's always about mixture. What amazes me here in Chicago, and you mentioned that now, only talking about the program in June, which is barely 3 weeks, is that we are allowed, and we are even being encouraged to do here pieces that you cannot find anywhere else. And the good news is just that we are being funded very differently from any other place I wouldn't dare to say in the country, but at least when we are talking about a very big city and a large music festival like ours, this is a new, unique thing. And because of all that funding, meaning the city of Chicago, Grant Park does a tremendous job helping us out. And with the support of several individuals, we can do this programming.
Now, let me just underscore here, if somebody's listening and saying, what? My government money is going to this. It ought to be going to Lord knows what. When you say, quote, all that funding, we're not talking about a multi-billion dollar budget, but what we're saying is that the necessary funding for the orchestra and for the guests is provided by the city, the park district, the association, volunteer, individuals, corporations, foundations. That's the unique mix. And then that there is a facility that has a separate ownership management that you don't have to be, there's a leak in the roof, we have to have a fundraiser, this kind of thing. So I just want to emphasize, not that you're underfunded, but that it's not like you're walking here like Scrooge McDuck and filling your pockets with bills as you then fly off to your next position.
The truth of the matter is that without the support from public money, we probably still can exist, but I want everybody who is listening to us to understand what would happen. Just let's just say it very clearly. The public money allows us to be free. Everybody here in Chicago, all you have to do is take the bus, take the subway, take the metro train, if you want to park. And then you sit wherever you want, and I see so many people bringing their coolers and the blankets, and there is nothing better than sitting in the lawn listening to fantastic music at such an incredible level. Now, take away the public funding, the festival will probably continue to exist. We will have to kind of close it off, charge money, which means it will be pretty much the average that everybody else does. And I dare to say thousands of people who are coming and enjoying the festival and the park could not do so. The good news about our festival, and we contribute to that in the sense that we are here for 10 weeks, meaning 2.5 months, not more, is that this festival reflects, at least to my understanding, the ownership of people from Chicago that they took over this wonderful park. I mean, I remember that when the park was opened, and of course the numbers were circulating about how much this entire thing cost.
Millennium Park.
Millennium Park as a whole, not only the Pritzker Pavilion. Of course, the former mayor of Chicago, Richard Taylor, got attacked. It was a huge chunk of money. But I would say that nobody could have imagined how much the inhabitants of Chicago took ownership of this. You take away the public money for our festival, that ownership, not as a whole, but for the summer, in part, will be gone. And also, you said the word, we are not underfunded as a festival. Let's just put it there. We are certainly not overfunded.
That's right.
Please, let's...
I just wanted to make that clear.
Let's make a comparison. I actually don't even want to compare to other entities. That's not the point. But we have a magnificent orchestra, a fantastic chorus, and a wonderful staff, and nobody here earns a great deal of money.
We are
paid so that we can pay our bills.
All of these are extremely important points. If there is one person in Chicago or the Chicago suburban, ex-urban area who has not walked past Millennium Park with a smile, or who has probably not brought other people to show them and to show this front yard of the city, I can't believe it. And the investment in those terms, yes, could the whole project have been managed in a different way, Probably. Could the financing have been done? Okay. But once it's built, we're talking about the operating expenses, and we're talking about this festival, which is beyond a success. 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 people. The whole thing, even with people standing, it's 12,000. So whenever you've got people hanging off the walls, you've already moved into additional digits of thousands,
and
the quality is untouchable.
Yeah, and I am very proud that there were people in Chicago who had the vision of creating all of this, and my participation personally is to just ensure that the artistic quality will be there and that we raise the bar constantly. I mean, you know that I do not live in Chicago as you do. But you will remember, because I even remember, how Millennium Park looked before it was Millennium Park. And if you look at what is there, it's
basically
not all...
you had abandoned rail yards. You had this kind of semi-park area that was, I don't think these terms are used any longer, but winos and people just doing Lord knows what and behind bushes and scary kind of area and, you know, just nothing.
And
sore.
And look what is now. This is, of course, I am very happy that I'm allowed to lead a festival in a piece of art designed by Frank Gehry, and I praise everybody who gave money to do that project. But it's not limited to that. Millennium Park, ice skating, the cloud, which is an incredible piece of art, the nature, the trees, the flowers,
and the fountain,
and the fountain, which is with all the children and all the faces of Chicago there. This is incredible.
In addition to the news that is made every day during the Grant Park Music Festival, and I mean that because the news is big. Music is great. The programming is eclectic and fascinating, inviting and inspiring. The playing is great. The soloists are international level quality. The musical leadership is tops, and the guests who come in are tops as well, but there's sometimes news, like who's doing what. And Lee Levine, who is the interim executive director of the Grant Park Music Festival, has some other kinds of news, and we're going to talk with her and with Carlos Kalmar about that. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Andrew. We are very excited to announce that Carlos Kalmar will officially take the title of artistic director of the Grant Park Music Festival, effective this season.
And in a way, it's both a way to decide how the festival will be shaped, to push it forward for the future, to recognize things that Carlos has already been doing, both
Correct.
Formally and informally over these years.
In truth, it's really a culmination of his decade of work with the festival. And indeed, when Jim Palermo left us, Carlos did step up and take on a much larger artistic role in the festival, and this is just simply a recognition of that.
Does this also mean that there will be news at some point about the non-artistic director of the festival?
One would hope so. We are actually engaged in a national search at the moment. We hope to have news, I would say, before the season begins.
But fortunately, with the staff that's here, with you as the interim and as someone who has taken that role and who has taken many roles here at the festival, it's not as if the festival is not able to run itself on the non-artistic side.
This is true. We are a well-oiled but very small machine here, so I can please rest assured that we have things covered and you will see a season just as you have for the last 76 years.
Carlos, tell us a bit about this change that is a change and isn't a change.
It is a change in the sense that I assume the responsibility officially. Lee said it already. Since Jim Palermo left, somebody had to assume the artistic responsibility. And of course, to me, it is very obvious that it has to be the principal conductor. Now, having said that, you have to understand that in the past, although Jim Palermo was the artistic director for so many years, and he did an incredible job doing that. Of course, Jim and I were in constant contact,
and he always made that clear.
I mean, we were just a great team. And the good news about that is we are still with Jim being now in Colorado. Here at the Grand Park Music Festival, we are a fantastic team. And nobody should understand that now everything has changed and this has fallen in a way into my lap as principal conductor. And now I'm cooking whatever I can come up with and leaving Lee as the interim executive director. Okay, I do the programming, you do whatever. You just make it possible. Yes, exactly. It doesn't work like that. The great thing is having Lee Levine is just a tremendous gift to anybody, and I hope very much that we can remain a team for a long while. And Lee has said it, we are a very small number of individuals who work for the Grand Park Music Festival year-round. But they are very committed individuals, and it's such a great joy to work with all of them. And whenever it comes to artistic decisions, without a doubt under my leadership, but I always have a dialogue with everybody here, and that makes, I would say, a great deal of the experience that you will have when you come in the summer.
We should also say that that team includes Christopher Bell directing the chorus, and that also has been not a rent-a-director situation. This goes back again to what you've laid out about how you and Jim, and then you and Jim and Chris, would talk together and put seasons together, and that Jim could introduce works and composers to you all, but also wanted to hear things that you all wanted to try that maybe he didn't know anything about, and that together you would brew up all kinds of stuff and continue to.
At the end of the day, I have to say that having Christopher Bell, this wonderful musician, leading our chorus and bringing the chorus to a level where the chorus has never been before, it's just a joy. And the way it works in terms of programming is that we are very good partners and very respectful to each other. I mean, we are also good friends, but in terms of the work, it's very respectful. And whenever we start thinking about the big projects of programming, of course, choral orchestral concerts are a big part of that. And we just interchange ideas. And I must tell you that right now, when I'm sitting here, I'm already thinking together with Christopher about the next season, the 2012, because in that season the chorus is going to celebrate their 50th anniversary. And of course you have to start thinking, okay, what are you going to do to celebrate that wonderful year? And so I am a strong believer that one of the reasons for the success of this festival is the fact that we work as a team.
And we'll be talking with Christopher during the season, but let me also underline that a part of what the team does is the outdoor concerts in the Pritzker Pavilion in Millennium Park, indoor concerts when the park south of there gets crazy with other things, but also that allow you to do works that might evaporate a little too quickly in the open air, and you're able to use the wonderful acoustics of the Harris Theater, which is a part of the Pritzker Millennium Park complex, and that can be for choral, orchestral, or choral only, and then at various times and in various places, some differences season to season, the opportunity to do satellite performances in other places with the chorus or chamber groups or the orchestra, and that really allows everyone the full expression of his or her musical and artistic ideas, as well as what the mechanics are and what the costs could be.
I would say that the
and recordings.
Let's
both
not
choral and orchestral and choral.
We should not forget exactly this wonderful word, which is recordings. I do not know whether there even exists another festival of this magnitude that pretty much consistently records. And there are by now several commercially available recordings done with this wonderful little gem of a label that is Cedillo Records here in Chicago, and all but one of these records are done by the Grand Park Orchestra with myself on the podium leading, and I'm very, very proud that probably by early June, if everything goes well, the very first CD will come out that features chorus and orchestra together. It's a project that we did last year, and we recorded it, and it was such a wonderful thing to work on this. And trust me, we are already thinking about the next recording projects.
Let me just put an asterisk here that although the CDs are commercially available, the CD Records is operated by a not-for-profit foundation. So again, an area where the support of a lot of different people comes into play, but this is a label devoted to Chicago performers, Chicago composers, Chicago institutions, and just another way that even though you are a Viennese, Uruguayan, Oregonian, you, boy, I never said that those three together quite like that before. You're also a Chicagoan, and to have this new title, which even if it takes knowledge of what you have done, does put you even more out there as a part of the artistic leadership in Chicago is really a wonderful thing, I think. Do you have to address Carlos with a new term or anything? Is he going to start wearing pants like Christopher Bell?
We could try, couldn't we, Carlos? But no, Carlos and I have a very rich relationship, and artistically speaking, and no, he will be Carlos to me, Maestro Calamar to everybody else, I imagine.
I have a general question, Lee, and it's something that's been coming up more and more with organizations as they have looked for ways to fully engage artistically with a community. And that is that there might be an effort to find a new general director, executive director, intendant, president, CEO, mm-hmm. while also there have to be certain artistic decisions made. So Lyric Opera announced Renee Fleming as an artistic advisor while it's in the midst of a search for a general director. You all have named an artistic director, but you're also looking for whatever the title will be, managing director, executive director. Do those kinds of things then shift a search? Because initially, might some of the applicants have been people who were looking back at the original Jim Palermo model of a general and artistic director? Or how do these things happen in the world of arts management?
Perhaps, although anyone doing their research on Grant Park would simply look back at the wonderful decade Carlos has had here, and if you were to scratch beneath the surface and ask the right questions, you would see that Carlos has had an extraordinary hand in the shaping of the artistic vision of this festival and will continue to, regardless of title.
Carlos,
so would it dissuade an executive director from coming? Absolutely not.
No,
quite
it would
the
just
opposite.
Clarify things.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. No, but I think that's very helpful because it's also a reminder that even a search process is more than a one-way process. People are looking at you. You're looking at people. Outside people are looking at the search.
Sure,
all of these
sure.
things go on. Carlos, when you arrived, and we spoke, I think, the very day you arrived for the first time or that you were announced to arrive, did you have any idea that this would become not a total commitment for the summers and for the parts of the year when you would be planning the summers, because that was obvious from the beginning, but did you have any idea this could become such a big part of your life long term and that you would then make a new long-term commitment on top of the commitment as principal conductor that you've already had?
I can answer that easily. The answer is absolutely not. Maybe in years I wasn't so insanely young, but this was the very first position in the United States of America that was offered to me. And of course, it was for me a dream coming true. And on top, it was such a great city as Chicago is. But just to use American terminology, all I thought at that time was, oh, cool, let's do it. And later on, I realized, okay, this is a very ambitious festival. You can really do things here. And then we already talked at length about the Pritzker and all that new possibilities. And so it has been growing. With that growing came my understanding that I had to learn a great deal of things. And I'm very grateful not only to everybody who guided me through all these years here in Chicago. I also have to mention my position as music director of the Oregon Symphony. I was musically trained not only, but for the most part in Europe, and I had been music director for many years before I came. In Europe, it's a very different type of job. Your responsibilities, I dare to say, at the time I was music director in Europe, were rather smaller than they are the requirements that you are being asked to do here. And I enjoyed the challenge. I always have enjoyed the participation in community things and meeting people, talking to people. And so I would hope that at the end of the day, somebody else, I can't judge that, can say that I have been growing with the job.
There's a wonderful interlocking, though, isn't there? The Grant Park position gave you an entree into America, exposure, American music, which became a very big part of what you do. And we saw it happen. It hit something inside of you. It wasn't a duty. This played a role in your coming to Oregon, and then the years as music director there have given you opportunities even beyond what you had here, communities, fundraising, board meetings, all of this kind of thing, and you can draw on that as your role is enhanced or formalized here. So that's the American dream in some ways, but I mean it in a good way. that this has, these things have fit together for you in a way that have allowed you to grow and to help these institutions grow.
I would say that all these years that I have spent so far in the United States being in responsible jobs, in jobs that have a very important responsibility, had led me to understand the job of a music director in a very different way, more complex, more complete way. One thing that I want to mention, and it's just one thing among many others, is before I came to the United States, I probably was not very much interested in the financial side of the institution. No surprise to that, because I was being music director in Europe. You're underfunded by the government. Pretty much 95% of your money comes from the government. Don't worry, it will be there somewhere. And then you come to America and none of that happens. And you have to understand your role in a very different way. And you have to understand your role on one side as an artist, but also with some overlapping duties into management issues. And I always was very glad and very curious to learn all of that. And so now we are here so many years later, and I hope very much that there are at least a couple of more years for me to enjoy this time.
While we have Lee Levine here, I know that another thing that's happening in 2011 is that existing community and outreach and education programs are being even more greatly enhanced. And maybe you could say something about those.
Sure. We piloted a program in 2010 which brought Chicago Park District Day Campers into Millennium Park to view, listen to, and engage with our orchestral musicians during our open rehearsal process. This year, we will augment the program, and we hope to have around 900 or so children through not only our open rehearsals, but our friends at the Lurie Garden as well. The children will spend a portion of their mornings in and around the gardens with music docents and will then come to our rehearsal.
These are the wonderful gardens, which are works of art and works of nature that exist. If you are facing the pavilion, they start at the back of the great lawn and
correct,
they go pretty much to the modern wing of the Art Institute, right, although there's a little busy street in between on Monroe there.
That's right. They're beautiful gardens, and I believe they've just taken a delivery of a large, I don't know what you call them, portion of bees. They have their own beehive this year, which will be a new addition to the garden.
I hope that the bees will be behind something.
And not flying in the children's lunches.
Right.
Yes.
So the kids will actually make the arts and nature and this orchestra a part of their, that will be their day camp.
That's true. But one thing I will add, Andrew, is that we at the Grant Park Music Festival see everything we do as community engagement, because there's no barrier to coming and sitting and enjoying the music. We feel we reach a lot of people that way as well. So not only do the children get their own specialized program this year, but indeed everything we do is community engagement.
We want to thank you, Lee Levine, for participating in our conversation, and Tony Macaluso for putting all of this together from that not overly paid, very hardworking, small staff that makes the Grant Park Music Festival happen, and the work that goes on behind the scenes. And you guys always look so calm. I don't understand it. Carlos, congratulations, and many more summers of great partnership and great music making. You have brought so much to Chicago and have added to an environment that can then welcome Ricardo Muti. And remember, where did he decide to unveil himself to Chicago? He borrowed your house, the Pritzker Pavilion, for a small concert
September. Yeah. Well, I'm very, very glad to be here, and I already looking forward to see all of you in our seating area or the lawn in the summer.
another world premiere recording by the Grant Park Orchestra, Carlos Kalmar, and Sadi Records. In this case, Aaron J. Kernis's Too Hot Toccata from 1996, recorded at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance in Millennium Park in June of 2007 and released on CD. We'll be talking more with Carlos as the season arrives. Opening night is Wednesday, June 15th, and you have 10 terrific weeks of music following from that free this summer at Grant Park. And of course, you can also support the festival, the orchestra, chorus, etc., by becoming a member, and you can also get special seating and that sort of thing that way. We want to thank Matt DeStefano for recording this program in unusual acoustics and with a host who had bronchitis at the time, and then for putting the program together and making it sound great. We want to thank our funders, Alphawood Foundation, Dick and Susan Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Drop us a line. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. Rentap. That's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com. You can do the chime in thing on the website. Oh, yes, the website, WFMT.com/critical thinking, where you can experience the always free Critical Thinking podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.